Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And we're talking about the season series premiere, the big one, 101 Uno is the name of this one. We've got a little bit of a theme going
bullshit.
With names.
There was five seasons that came before this.
You know, kind of, yeah. I'm with you. Watching this a second time, I realized that a lot of my complaints about the pacing of this show come from the second episode, not this one.
And I don't know. I'm not convinced that your pacing complaints are entirely valid. We got to see a larger sample size, but
sure. I even said that. I'm not judging it yet, but
I thought the pilot was really entertaining. And
yeah.
I did get some email from a Breaking Bad virgin that talked about their approach to the show and what they made of it. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised at, I guess, how approachable it was from someone that didn't get, because especially, I guess not so much for the pilot, but for the second episode, which we should probably not talk about.
Yeah.
I felt like a lot of what made that tick would only work in context of seeing Breaking Bad, but I could be overstating that case. I had a lot of fun. Okay.
And it's impossible for us to see it from any other perspective, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with this first episode, and I just was reminded at how fucking good the Villigan, and I'm going to coin the Ghoul.
Peter Gould?
For Peter Gould, the Ghoul. The Villigan and the Ghoul are at making television. Like, there was this one sequence where it was, you know, the twins on the corner of the, what was the Lush House?
Cafe Lush.
Cafe Lush. Yep. Where apparently everybody's hungover goes to get the coffee. They're just kind of sitting there waiting for the shit brown Mercury to come by.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, man, they really know how to film this shit.
Yeah. No, it looks beautiful. This show,
the craft on display is really amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of shots are really good. We'll talk about some of them when we get to them. But is there anything else you wanted to say before we get into the recap?
You know, again, directed by Vince Gilligan, written by Peter Gould.
Yeah, I think they co-wrote most of the season together, didn't they? I mean, I know they're co-showrunning this together.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe not. Who knows?
I remember looking. I don't think that's true.
Okay.
If I remember looking at the Wikipedia page, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they're both credited as the creators, and then this first one says it was written by both of them.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to continue into future episodes, but
I wonder how. I would love to know what the process was, because I've read a lot of interviews and stuff where they just really spent a lot of time trying to figure out what is going to be the tone, what is the time period, how self-referential do we want to get, that kind of stuff. And I just wonder like what that process was like.
I feel like maybe they could have been reined in a little bit on some of that. Like the references are,
see, I disagree.
They are many in number.
I disagree, and I felt like I gave the wrong impression about me being down on the show, because I feel like a lot of people thought that we both were disappointed, and I really enjoyed it. And I was trying to say that walking that fine line of being a love letter to Breaking Bad and rewarding Breaking Bad fans without it becoming a farce there was parts of this that started to almost feel, especially in the second episode, like an SNL skit. Bob Odenkirk had come in on season 5 of Breaking Bad to guest host SNL, and they'd gotten Raymond Cruz, and they did like a skit about what that would be like. But again, it's like, how close can you get to that point to maximize the awesome before you drop off and fall into that valley of parody? And I think that they did a brilliant job of walking that line, where a couple points I was getting ready to be like, oh, come on. But they put a little twist on it, or they, you know, called on a little bit of knowledge out of the characters that made it okay.
All right. I can respect that. I mostly agree, especially in this first episode. I think in the second episode, they went too far with a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that kind of, like, I watched them back to back, so that kind of colored my perception of the first one significantly. But there is a scene in here that I didn't really like too much, which we'll talk about later. But I feel like we should just get into the recap. And
I just want to make one more observation.
Okay.
If I were to ask you, what is Aaron's biggest bugaboo with television? Like, what's the thing that really jars me out of something? What is it?
Unbelievable coincidences.
Okay, damn it, I got two. What's the second one?
Poor characterizations? Inconsistent characters?
Tone.
Okay.
Like a tone, like not knowing whether you're being funny or being like tragic or being sad.
Oh, okay.
Tonal conflict is what really bugs me and takes me out of entertainment. I would say if I was to pinpoint your biggest problem or consistent criticism of television, it tends to be with pacing.
Probably, yeah.
Like you say that, like, you know, when we're talking about, and I know that that was kind of a barrier to you getting into Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
You had to make a couple attempts before you kind of got what was going
on. Same with True Detective, yeah.
Same with True Detective. So I can see where this would be, you'd be hypersensitive to that.
Yeah, and while we were watching the first two episodes, I was constantly saying, you know, this is entertaining, but it hasn't hooked me yet. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's wrapped up kind of in that pacing, right? Like, yep. I want the thing that's going to excite me to the point where I'm invested.
Sure.
And I don't know, looking back at episode one, it's better than I gave it credit for. But, man, episode two, we'll talk about that. Maybe after tomorrow. A second watch, I'll feel the same way. But
we'll get to talk about it tomorrow. You don't have to wait long.
All right, cool. Well, let's get into the recap. We start off with what I think is an awesome Cinnabon montage here. It's a cooking montage. It's Breaking Bad's literal cooking montage for Cinnabon.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting how it started off, like, funny. And then it got kind of scary and tense, and then it just got sad.
Yeah.
As he's sitting there watching his glory years. And I thought there was so much interesting parallels between this and the Granite State episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're both kind of in. I mean, this is, I guess, Saul's idea of a wasteland. And he's isolated. He's completely alone.
And I like that Address Unknown song because it puts you in that space of where are we? What are we? How did this character get here? What's going on?
And it's all in black and white. And then we see just the barest hints of color in the reflection of his glasses as he's watching his, you know, glory years. And I thought that was so cool that this is the man who's had all the Saul Goodman beat out of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even all the slipping Jimmy. It's just all gone. He's a husk.
Yeah, he is a cinnamon-covered husk.
I'm impressed, though, with Saul Goodman's trim figure. If I worked at a Cinnabon, it would be scary.
Yeah.
It would be scary.
Yeah, that's the end of it. If I worked at a Chipotle, it'd be all
Oh, my God, yeah. You would be 350 pounds within a year.
Sure, maybe faster. Do you think they'll stick with black and white for all the future scenes? All the...
Well, I mean, how many future
stuff
scenes
that's
do you
not
think
in
we have?
The present of the show.
How many future scenes do you think we have in store?
I think there are going to be more, certainly.
Do you think there's going to be a parallel story about the rise of Saul Goodman and the fall of Saul Goodman?
Might be interesting. It, like I said in the instant cast, it definitely reminded me of the teddy bear around the pool scenes in Breaking Bad, where they had just the one piece of color
in
the otherwise black and white film. And they did that several times, so I assume they're coming back with that again at some point.
That would be kind of interesting. Do you, in a kind of a memento type of way, how far do you think we're going to have to go until we get to Saul? Because they teased they set it up right here in the beginning. Like, you know, you can't do you just like I need to talk about your name, my name. How many episodes do we go before he comes up with the Saul Goodman?
I think he's going to be fighting those guys, the lawyers, for a while, the law firm.
Is that like season one?
I think maybe a season one. Yeah.
So
maybe we'll get through season one. He'll start up his own practice as Saul Goodman. I don't know, because there's got to be a lot of Tuco in this as well. Setting him up so early, knowing that he doesn't die throughout this whole thing. There's got to be a lot of interaction there.
I wonder how much Tuco will actually get and how much we'll be dealing with his lieutenant.
Yeah.
Because I can see Raymond Cruz. He's still busy on, is it the Cold Case? I forget what he's doing, but he still has a show that he's working on.
Yeah, he does. I don't remember the name of it.
So, all right. Well, yeah, I guess we're kind of already into the episode.
The closer.
Maybe we should get back to it.
That's
the closer. That's right.
Yep. All right. He pours himself a drink. He sits down, watches commercials, and then we go.
That seems like a great drink. It seems like he... Saul Goodman, or whoever he is in Omaha, Nebraska, has a decent amount of money. He's drinking Dewars, which isn't like top shelf, but it's not bad. And what would you call that drink?
I don't know.
It seems delicious, and I love the fact that he doesn't even bother to stir it. It's just booze on top of booze with lemon or lime juice. And
so that first sip is all lemon.
Not even a finger swizzle. Not even a swirl of the glass. It's just whatever, man. I'm not even drinking it for the taste anymore. It's just
it's just something I do.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what that drink is called. If anybody knows what Drambuie whiskey and lemon juice is called, let us know, because I might like to mix some up here in the studio. Give it a shot. And I will actually mix mine.
You will?
Yeah.
No, I think you need to go the layered. You need like a layer cake first.
Maybe it's supposed to be a layered drink. I doubt it.
Like a one of those birthday cake cocktails?
Uh-huh.
Hey.
We find out this has to be quite a while after Breaking Bad because Saul has lost all of his hair, almost.
A lot. Although, a good stress can do that for you.
I mean, he's holding on to the barest minimum required for it to be called hair.
Sure. Well, I mean, I started going bald when I had my son. I think it can.
All right.
Stress can do it for sure. Didn't have any gray in my beard back then either.
Nope.
God damn it. Kids, man. What do you think of the title sequence?
It's weird. It ends so abruptly that I almost thought something had gone wrong.
Yeah, and it's kind of low rent in a way that I guess is fitting with Saul, and I was underwhelmed because there's been a lot of really great, like the Americans has an awesome title sequence. It's short and punchy and it's driving, and this is kind of like slow and meandering.
Yeah,
but then Breaking Bad's title sequence is nothing to write home about.
It's just smoke and a couple of letters
and a little bit
and
of
a musical note,
like a rattlesnake rattle at the end. So
yeah, and I mean, look at the even more simple example of Lost. Had a very memorable
one.
Just one note, the Ariel letters
Bold
lost
getting fuzzy. Yeah,
that's it. And it was effective because you knew like, you know, what it should tell you, what show you're watching, and also it put you in a mood for that show.
Yeah, what's tantalizing is it was a completely different one for episode two.
Yeah,
and I wonder if they're going to do that. I kind of think that would be cool if it was a slightly different, you know, a little bit of a different cut, which I know you don't watch Banshee, but I was like most of the way through season two before I realized that the credit sequences is slightly different every time in a way that informs the story.
Oh, yeah.
And once I did, it's like, God damn it, I'm going to have to go back and watch all the intros to see. But I thought I dig that when there's something a little different each time.
Yeah.
Or like Walking Dead does when they change it between seasons. Mm-hmm. I like that. I don't like for the credits to stay static the whole time.
Yeah. This time it's a big inflatable Statue of Liberty. And we know where that comes from.
Sure.
Anyway, everyone
Saul's love doll.
We go to present day. Everyone in the courtroom is waiting for Jimmy McGill. They send the bailiff to the bathroom to go get him, and he comes back with this impassioned speech, trying to get his defendants off the hook. You know, and it seems to be a reasonable speech.
And I'm thinking, yeah, these kids beat a mailbox. Maybe they cherry bombed the bathroom.
No big deal.
Yeah, what are you gonna do?
They're kids. And then the guy whips out the tape and plays it for the jury.
As soon as
the
TV got wheeled out by the prosecutor, I'm like, oh, this is going to be something crazy.
Yep. Yeah, and they show a video of the kids cutting off the head of a corpse and having sex with it.
They didn't show the latter part, but yeah. Yeah. I was.
It definitely happened.
I was wondering when this was happening. I was like, man, how explicit are they going to get with this? How, like, is it just going to be shocked jurors not wanting to make eye contact? We just are left to imagine what we're seeing. But I liked how they kind of, again, they walked a nice balance between showing how awful what these kids did, but yes, sparing us the actual, kind of.
Yeah, the full penetration.
The slipping Jimmy. They spared us the slipping Jimmy.
Oh, my God. All right. So he goes out to his car, and he stops at the booth where he gets his check. $700 for this case, and apparently took a lot of time.
No wonder public defenders are not the way to go.
That seems pretty low.
Although I think it'd be fun if you were independently wealthy and you were passionate about the law to just be a public defender. Like, just be a badass public defender. Like, prosecutors shit their pants when they, drew this guy.
Yeah, take like one case every few
months.
And
give it the Matt Damon Rainmaker treatment. Like, I'm taking you down, motherfucker. That would be awesome. Like, you'd be the legal equivalent of Batman.
Sure.
Who doesn't want to be the legal equivalent of Batman? Saul Goodman could be the legal equivalent of Batman, and I would watch that show. Just saying.
All right. Would he have to wear a mask?
No.
All
just
right.
cheap
I don't think they'd let him wear a mask.
Off the suit, you know, Men's Warehouse style.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, he gets a call suits. In the parking lot, pretends to be his own secretary, which I thought was hilarious. And he asks if the client can meet him at a cafe.
Total Miss Doubtfire.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a British woman's accent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good job, Bob Odenkirk. That was effective.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him, meet me at the cafe instead of the office, because as we find out soon, his office is shit.
Horror show.
I really like here where he walks out. Here's another Breaking Bad nod. He walks out toward a car, which is a really nice Cadillac. And you're thinking, oh, man, he drives a pretty nice car.
A lot better heel than we think.
Which, as we know from Breaking Bad, that is the car he drives.
Exactly the car.
Uh-huh. And so we're thinking, yeah, that could be his car. But no, he is driving this shitty... what did we find out it was?
I thought it was some sort of Geo Metro, or what is the other Geo Metro that's not the...
The other Geo?
Yeah, there's another Geo. Not the Tracker. There's the other one that's more of a sedan. But anyway...
Prism?
Yes.
Geo Prism. Yeah.
It's a Suzuki Esteem.
Yeah.
Which is funny all around.
Yeah.
No, it's a Suzuki Esteem.
It is a Suzuki? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's somehow worse, right?
The fact that car is called Esteem.
Uh-huh.
It's like my first car was a 1985 Chevy Celebrity.
Hmm.
And let me tell you, I did not feel like a celebrity driving it. I felt like I was driving a shitbox, because I was.
Yeah. I had a 1990 Chevy Corsica.
Mm.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad.
Didn't make me feel like a celebrity, but it didn't need to.
No. But Corsica, what the hell is that? That's like some kind of pirate?
Probably, yeah.
Those are the guys that tried to kill Captain Picard in The Next Generation. They ran his heart through.
Yes.
Corsicans, right? Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure.
Yeah. Anyway, he tries to get out of the parking lot, but Mike is standing there, not letting him out because he doesn't have the right number of tickets. Mike is a stickler for the rules.
And immediately we're wondering, how the hell does Mike the Mantrout end up in this fucking booth? From what we know of
or
his
start
backstory.
In this booth.
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess also end up if he was a detective.
This is not his final destination, but this is a weird waypoint for him to be stuck at.
Yeah.
And knowing everything we know about his personality, what this must be like.
I also like what this says about Jimmy's state. He doesn't want to pay the $3. It's worth his time to go back in, get a sticker, and come back out, even though we know that the trip takes like 10 minutes. On the elevator, up and down. $3. It's not worth paying the man $3.
The man is broke.
Yeah. Definitely broke. We'll find out more about that later. He meets with the client at the cafe. We find out the client's being investigated for embezzlement. $1.6 million from the county treasury.
Yep.
It's a good chunk of money.
You think he's guilty?
Yes. That boat says guilty all the way.
Ah.
Unless, yes. I mean... I suppose he could have, like, he's driving a shitty car, right? I suppose he could be spending all of his money on the boat, not none of his money on the car.
Sure.
But a boat that big is expensive.
You know, it's kind of like the Schrader conundrum. How does a radiation tech and a DEA agent afford a $1 million home in Albuquerque with nice vehicles and all that stuff? So,
yeah.
Sometimes there's no there, but I feel like you're right. The boat is...
I think it's a clue.
It's a clue.
All right. He wants him to sign a contract to represent them, but the wife wants to sleep on it, and then he gives him, on the way out, a matchbook with his name and phone number on it, and they take off.
And I think that was... I don't know why this guy was going to sign with Saul. And then she kind of took one look at him and kind of got a little bit of an ambulance-chasing vibe from him and decided they needed a different McGill.
Yeah.
To represent them.
Yeah, he's giving off desperation. That look on his face as he's watching
like
the pin.
It's just like when, you know, I had my old dog and he saw me walking towards the, the food bag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's literally licking his chops like, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Yeah. You don't want that.
the actress here is also in Fargo. She plays the wife of
the sheriff.
The chief. It's a chief, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a spoiler to say?
I don't think it's a spoiler to say he gets killed in the very
murdered,
first episode.
Yes, yeah. Okay, good.
That's not spoiling much of that show.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of actually the premise of that show.
And you should see Fargo. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So it was cool to see her again in this.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy drives home. He's on the phone. He's reading a credit card. He is trying to order flowers for this client when he hits a guy on a skateboard.
Something that's classy but not expensive.
Looks classy. Looks expensive, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
Turns out these guys are a couple of scammers, and Saul immediately susses that out and flips it around on them, and they just take off running.
The other thing about his car, not only is it like the... It's the Pontiac Aztec of Pontiac Aztecs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the King of Kings. It's a Pontiac Aztec of the Pontiac Aztecs.
It's like the worst of the worst?
Yeah. It's missing its headrest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which makes it a death trap. Like, if he gets hit 15, 20 miles an hour in a bumper, his neck is snapped.
Mm-hmm.
He also never wears a seatbelt.
Yeah.
He drives like a maniac.
He does.
While he's talking on a cell phone and looking at his credit card. If I wasn't entirely certain that he wasn't going to die before the end of the season or the end of the series, I would think that this car would be the death of him.
Yeah, this is a classic shot where I'm like, oh man, they're about to have him hit something. Like the whole time I was thinking that because,
sure,
you know, he's that's the like shot you use
and, yep.
when you want someone to hit something in spectacular fashion.
Sure.
I don't get the Starlight Express reference. It is a musical of some kind by Andrew Lloyd Webber, but I...
Really?
I don't fucking get it.
Andrew Lloyd Webber. I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. Rock musical. I don't know.
Oh.
I looked it up briefly, but I think it's a reference you have to have seen the thing to get.
What was that rock musical that we saw for a bald movie once? Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't really like those style musicals, but I like that one.
All right.
And Hairspray. That's pretty good.
So he goes back to his office, which is in the very back of nail salon. I can't imagine ever inviting a client back here.
Like, oh, God, no.
You're sitting next to a water heater. They can't get in the door.
Yeah.
It's at the back of a nail salon.
Yeah.
It's the worst of worst offices as well.
And his landlord, like, she has the chutzpah to charge him money to stay in her boiler room.
Mm-hmm.
And she also denies him cucumber water.
Yeah.
It's for customers only. It's like, okay, I'm paying you money to shack up in your fucking closet. I can't get cucumber water? Can I use your bathroom? Is that for, or do I have to go piss out in the alley? What the fuck?
Yeah, just take the top off the hot water heater and piss in that.
Right.
That's what I say.
But I do like her point of like, you know, you why do you work with people who have sex with heads?
Yeah, no, it's fair. You know, somebody's got to defend him, though, right?
Yeah, true.
Somebody's got to.
That's why our justice system works so well. We have principles. Everyone gets a fair defense.
Yep. Anyway, he's back there checking his messages. He doesn't have any. He looks through his mail, and he has something there, a big-ass check made out to him, and it is a shock when he tears that up. I really love this scene because they set this guy up as having no money.
Right.
And then when he tears a $26,000 check up, you're like, what is this man doing? He's lost his goddamn mind.
It's an exclamation point.
Yeah, and the shot through the ceiling, like through those, through what in Breaking Bad they would have pulled out a ceiling tile and shot through it and let you like think, oh, they're shooting through the ceiling. Here, it's just like they're permanently gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really like that.
Yeah, the drop ceiling's gone. And there was, I forget, maybe it was Seven Wall. He talked about how is very evocative of like prison bars.
Yeah, yeah. But
he's a cage. He's like caged up in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt this is a very Breaking Bad scene. The camera angle, the feel.
Yeah.
This felt very piloted. This is Walter. What am I to do? What am I to do, Walter? You know.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing about that check is that he is a named partner at a law firm, and you're like. Or it appears that way.
Sure.
You're like, what is he doing in this room?
Because that's why you pause it. It's a Hamlin McGill. What the? Yeah.
It's made out to him. It's a massive amount of money. Why is he here?
Sure. Sure.
So brilliantly set up as far as that's concerned. This nail salon, let's talk about it in relation to Breaking Bad. We know that at some point, Saul Goodman has set somebody up as a front with a nail salon. This could potentially be that, I guess.
I'm pretty sure that this has been confirmed. It is this nail salon.
Okay. Do you think it's going to be a front for Tuco's operation?
I don't think so. I don't think Tico's that involved.
So it's going to be somebody else along the line that we see Jimmy get involved with.
There's a lot of stuff in a second episode that is kind of into that.
When I say Tuco's operation, I'm kind of including everyone in that.
I know. Okay. I feel like that this is a question of when is, because at so far we see Saul, yes, he's trying to scam the legal system, and one evidence is he's trying all three defendants in one trial because he's thinking, oh yeah, I found the loophole.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get $2,100 if I did the math right. I'm going to get $2,100 for one case.
Mm-hmm.
And then the legal system's like, nope, I'm going to scam you right back. So, but he's still,
good try.
He's still operating within the law.
Yeah.
Although I don't know what he pulls with the twins is legal.
No, it's not, certainly.
But he certainly sees it as, you know, maybe it's not conventional, but it's not criminal. When is he going to go from this guy who's got high-minded ideals and is trying to be an officer of the court to a criminal lawyer? You know,
sure.
That's not chips to Scarface. That's, I don't know what you would call that.
I don't either. I don't know that there's a super fair comparison.
Sleazy
there,
to scumbag?
Yeah. I don't know. That journey is going to be interesting to watch, certainly. You can tell that Saul, you know, has kind of the roots of what makes Saul Saul in this.
Right.
But he's definitely not crossed any of those kind of lines yet.
Right.
And so watching him get there is going to be cool. He goes into the HHM law office, and he goes right into the boardroom during a meeting. He gives a couple of quotes from Network.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that his brother, who is a partner at this law firm, so it's not Jimmy who's a partner, he's also sick. He hasn't worked there in a long time, and they've been sending him stipend checks, or trying to send him stipend checks. And so that's what the $26,000 check was. They're trying to do that instead of buying him out of the firm.
Sure.
And you noticed something here as he goes up in the elevator, or as he gets into the elevator with the trash can.
The trash can's pre-dented.
Yeah.
So are they trying to imply that this is not the first time he's gone to HH&M and been disappointed?
Like that? I think that's fair.
This is his frequent target of rage, or are we going to then? Because I'm kind of interested in whether this show's going to play around with time.
Yeah.
Are we going to jump? Are we ever going to get to see Slippin' Jimmy in his heyday? Are we going to see his going through law school, taking the bar exams? Like, where exactly are we going to be rooted in the time?
That's a good question, because I don't feel like they did a great job de-aging these people. Like,
yeah.
Mike kind of looks a little older than Mike looked in Breaking
Bad. And Tuco and Bob Odenkirk. There's only so much you can do with Raymond Cruz and Bob Odenkirk, because the reality is they're, like, almost a decade older.
But I have seen some really good de-aging jobs, and these weren't them.
Well, but I...
Do you like think a Brad Vince Pitt does... in sort of... In the Benjamin Button stuff.
Well, Jesus,
I realize that's
Brad
a much higher budget.
Pitt. I mean, yeah, like you can make Angelina Jolie look like she's 18. What's your point?
Wait, why the fuck does it matter who it is?
Come
They're
on.
Still looking older.
Take 30
it's
years
budget.
Off of Danny DeVito's a lot fucking harder than taking 20 years off of Brad Pitt. I'm just saying.
You're saying the shape that they're in.
You get the lump of clay that you get, okay? So
you also get the budget that you get. And
but
that's
a
fucking movie.
But I think sometimes Vince might do that as a stylistic choice. Like, you know, it's always kind of a put on when you see this stuff. So, like, when I want to shoot Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston in the finale of Breaking Bad, I'm not going to worry the fact that Aaron Paul does not anywhere resemble his physical or facial appearance in the first season of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to try. Yeah. So maybe he's doing that, like, you know, yeah, he's got more hair and slightly more makeup, but I'm not going to sweat the fact that, I'm not going to make Bob sit in the makeup chair for 6 hours a day just so people will be like, oh, wow, look how
but
good
it's that attention to detail that we love so much about Breaking Bad, right?
But what details do we love? Like, if can that be a stylistic choice where it's like...
Maybe...
You know,
I was just a
like
little
in Shakespeare's days, all the women were played by men.
Mm-hmm.
How much did Shakespeare sweat the fact that his men were sexy and had nice legs and had, believable cheekbones? Like, did he care? Or was he just more interested in,
telling
a
story?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just asking questions.
All right.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll see.
All right.
See what they do with time. I don't know. On the way out of the law office, Hamlin tries to get Jimmy to take some paperwork to his brother. Jimmy says, go fuck yourself. And he also spies Hamlin talking to his would-be clients that he met with the cafe. And he just feels completely dejected. He goes downstairs, he kicks the trash can, and he bums a smoke from the woman who was in the boardroom. I think her name is Kim. Chuck, I think, mentions her later in another scene.
Okay.
And says, like, your friend Kim. I think that's who that is. So I don't know if she's a partner, if she's maybe the other Hamlin, or if she is... No, I don't think so, because she has a promising career, and that could be snuffed out.
She's not. Maybe she's a junior partner, but why is she associated with Jimmy?
I don't know. They are friends, apparently.
Yeah.
And obviously, but she's unwilling to help him in this scene. So.
We talked about the trash can, but that's an homage to the paper towel dispenser, right? From season 2 of Breaking Bad and season 5?
No, definitely. It's a pretty good one. I like it.
And did you get the what... did you get what Hamlin was trying to do by giving him the paperwork to give to Charlie?
Yeah, he's trying to get work stuff to Chuck's house so that it looks like he's still working on
cases.
It's
the Tom Hagen, like, now if I, Kay, if I take that letter from you, they could prove in a court of law that I know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, they could prove he was still working on active cases and
All
that stuff. So Jimmy goes home to a bizarre setup here. He puts his phone, his watch, his keys in the mailbox. Mm-hmm. He goes inside and he grounds himself on some metal object. His brother's typing up a letter to some foreign doctor or foreign professor. And Jimmy tells him, hey, you're out of cash.
Yeah.
You need to cash out of the firm. He says, I can't support us anymore. There's a lot of stuff in the scene. Let's take it from there.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. I like how they set this scene up. It feels very bizarre. I mean, they've been doing this throughout the entire episode so far, right? Like, setting up things that seem very strange, but then they all have great explanations. And I like that, you know, Breaking Bad did that a lot. The show is kind of continuing that tradition, and it works for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you felt about it, but... it also is interesting to see the difference between Saul or Jimmy and his brother. In this scene, Jimmy is much more concerned about money. Mm-hmm. Chuck is much more concerned about the people that money is supporting.
But he's also a little kooky.
Oh, more than a little. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, he's okay when he's in his own house and everyone is grounded.
But that's not okay.
No. He can interact normally with people once they've gone through his weird-ass procedures.
Sure. All right.
But yes, he's very much not normal.
Yeah.
I kind of sympathize a little bit with Saul here about being all about the money, because apparently he has been supporting both himself and his brother on that shitty $700 a defendant salary.
Which is bullshit. How is that ever? Yeah. How does that ever happen? Like,
well, he doesn't want him to take those checks. So
yeah, but what has his brother done? If his brother was a named partner in a law firm, does he have nothing to show for it? I mean, I'm very curious to see how Chuck got in this predicament. Did he go through a nasty divorce? Mm-hmm. And this is like his way of shutting out, like, you know, I'm having panic attacks at work, so it must be radiation. I need to have all my electricity shut off and just live in my house like a hermit. Although he says he's not a recluse. later on.
He just can't leave because all of the electromagnetism.
No, like what happened to him? Was it, which came first? The crippling, psychosomatic mental affliction? Did he have a divorce that was caused by that? It's like, you know, he doesn't have, there's no woman there. There's no kids. There's no evidence of any of that. Has he been a weird guy his whole life?
Potentially. I mean, I think within the last year or potentially two, he has kind of taken his leave of absence and gone full recluse. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that stuff doesn't just happen overnight, right?
Yeah.
It builds on top of years of that.
Right. But I'm just thinking, like, why would Jimmy have to support him? Because he was a successful lawyer. You'd think he'd have some kind of cash he could draw on.
You would think so.
And he's not out of it. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, this guy was not... yeah, he's off his rocker, but he's not.
Seems like he could work from home, maybe?
Or
passing papers back and forth.
Or he'd at least be aware enough that, hey, my bills are not getting paid.
Yeah,
I'm about to run out of. None of this should be a surprise to him. He doesn't seem like he's mentally incompetent. From a legal standpoint.
Yeah, that's what I kind of meant.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I'm really curious to see how he got here and where he goes from here. Like, what's this arc?
Yeah, definitely.
Because Jimmy sees him as, I mean, I thought it was just his payday, but he seems like he really cares about his brother.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you can tell that he kind of doesn't. He definitely doesn't think that his brother's gonna just snap out of this and beat it. As Chuck says, he's trying not to say that to him, though.
He's trying very hard to not get him riled, like just to placate him.
Yeah.
He's really, really got the kid gloves on. Like, and he's not saying something like, you're crazy. This electromagnetic stuff is crazy.
Yeah.
Even though he clearly believes that to be true.
Yeah. And I wonder why. I don't.
He's the younger brother. He's got a lot of respect for his older brother. He is attempting to ride on his coattails, and he doesn't.
Somewhat. Yeah.
And he thinks that there is a bit of this, like, hey, this could be our payday for both of us.
Sure. Sure. I mean, $17 million would go a long way for
Plus,
both of them.
Chuck is an idiot. If he thinks that the Hamlins are going to go out of business because they have to buy his partner out, there's no way. That's the thing is like, he does seem incredibly naive.
Maybe so.
And I don't know if he's gotten that way or if he's always been that way. I don't know.
The thing that really struck me about this scene is we find out that Jimmy has nothing, really. I mean, aside from his brother and his home there, I mean, Jimmy is having everything taken from him. And especially when we get to the end of this scene. I know, when we get to the end of the scene and Chuck is saying, hey, Hamlin doesn't want you to use the McGill name in your law practice. I mean, he's not only in that moment having his name taken away from him, which would be bad enough, but he's having his brother turned against him as well.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing he really has.
Sure.
So it's like you get an entirely pathetic picture from Jimmy here, and it's really effective. And I thought this was one of the most interesting parts of the show.
Yeah, like when your crazy brother who's living in the dark with rotten bacon pulls you aside and says, look at your life, look at your choices, Jimmy, tries to patronize you, that's hard to take, man.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when you don't want to say, look who's talking.
Yeah, like every once in a while I've had experience where a person that I don't like or respect, but I you know, I'm a pretty good job of being civil to people. Like a coworker, and they will mistake my tolerance of their bullshit as like me genuinely liking them, and then they'll try to give me advice, and it's one of the hardest things to do. Like someone that you think is an idiot, like claps his hands on his shoulder and tries to give you like career advice, and like your head is like wanting to just explode and flip off, and like, well, what do you do? You're still working at this. You can't just beat them to death. That's crime number one. You get fired number two. I don't. Fair. And if it's your family, holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. So.
Yep. Rough stuff. At least he doesn't have a power bill to pay. How about that?
There you go. There you go.
So Jimmy goes to the skate park where the guys he hit earlier are at, the skateboard twins, as I'll call them. He tells them the story of Slip and Jimmy, and he offers them a target for their scam in exchange for a finder's fee. Offers them their biggest payday ever. So hard to turn that down. I love the story of Slip and Jimmy.
I like the way they filmed this. I can't remember who, because I've read so many reviews and stuff, but someone said that this was like a Sermon on the Mound style, that Jimmy was like Jesus and the two guys, they're like his disciples sitting there, you know, it's like story time.
He's passing off his wisdom.
And yeah, like they had their carpet squares and their milk boxes and they're just listening to him, oddly respectful to this stranger. I thought it was... it's good. I thought it was immensely entertaining when Jimmy gets on a roll and starts Saul Goodmaning. It's very, very entertaining.
Yep, good stuff.
And the whole, like, you know, like, he grabs her phone. It's like, you know, I'm number one speed dial right next to your weed deal. He's like slipping all this passive aggressive insults as he's bringing them along. Like, it's like, I'm going to give you an attaboy and now I'm going to give you a smack on the bottom. It's
sure
great.
Yeah, this is where I start to have a problem with the episode. The next couple of scenes, he takes these kids over to house.
Before you get here. Yeah. In this commercial break, they played in its entirety, at least in the second showing, the Better Call Saul song.
Oh, yeah.
Saul, which has been stuck in my head, and I also hate. Like, I hate this.
You hate how amateur it seems. Do you think that's on purpose, though?
I don't know, because they spent a lot of time and money to do it, and they're clearly proud of it. Mm-hmm. But at some point, like, they're starting to sing about the guy in the ice cream truck, and I'm like, come. You can't defend pedophiles, man. I guess you have to if you're a public defender. But
you defend corpse head fuckers. Like,
this isn't a public defender shit. This is like his commercial. Like, you better call Saul.
Yes.
And I'm like, this guy's trying to molest kids with an ice cream truck.
Yeah.
You're creepy. The hero of the show. Like, this is some season five shit you should be getting up to. I don't know. Plus, I just don't like the song.
Yeah.
And it's stuck in my head and it's not helping matters. Caught myself singing in the shower this morning. I'm like, what the fuck?
What am I doing?
I had
look
a moment.
At my choices.
I had a moment of clarity.
All right. So he takes the twins over to a house and has them memorize a car. And then he takes them to a street corner outside Cafe Lush and explains the plan. And here's where I felt like things started to fall apart.
You don't like it. I was eating it up.
It's too much for something that isn't going to pan out.
But see, I think that's what's brilliant about it. It's applying the same level of detail and impressiveness and we're like ooh and ah that you would give George Clooney explaining a casino heist in an Ocean's 11, 12, 13 movie.
That's fine, but
to this low stakes crackpot plan, which you already know 30 seconds into it is going to, you don't know how.
Yeah, but it's going to blow up.
And I was amazed at how explosively bad it went and where it, you know, went and with Tuco.
Sure.
But I think that was kind of brilliant.
This detailed explanation does not strike me as Saul. Not strike me as Jimmy. Yeah, if you go back to Breaking Bad and you watch when he's interacting with Walter Jesse, he's just very much like surface details. We'll get it done. Goodbye.
Well, so
he's not like memorize this car. What color is it? He's not George Clooney in Ocean's 11. He's another guy who comes in, kind of flies by the seat of his pants, and assumes everything will be okay.
No, in Breaking Bad, if this was a Breaking Bad story, we'd see Saul swear revenge on the Hamlins. He'd go to the park and say, I have a business proposition for you two. And then we'd cut to those twins standing on the corner. And we'd be like, what the hell is the plan? And we'd see it walk.
Yeah.
But it's not. And they took this opportunity.
But I don't want a 10-minute scene of them setting up a plan.
But what didn't you like about it? It's Saul Goodman being hilarious. And two doofuses.
I mean, maybe it was just too much Saul Goodman being hilarious. Because that seems like all the show is trying to be at the beginning.
No,
Breaking
it's different
because,
like I said,
links.
Breaking Bad they would have basically announced a plot is being hatched, a scheme is being born, and then you would see the scheme happening.
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
You weren't privy to, like, you know, they went from Walt saying we need methylamine to the methylamine caper, and you're like halfway through before you realize what the hell's going on.
Yeah,
Better
and
Call
then
Saul
in retrospect, the people who have to be detailed about this shit, like Hank, would kind of explain in rough details. I mean, he wouldn't even be like dwelling on it for 10 minutes. He'd just say, oh, this was dumb of them to do it this way, and then they'd move on.
But
pacing
it's reductive.
In these scenes feels off to me.
It's reductive for Walt to tell his plan and then show us the plan, because Walter White telling us the plan is actually less interesting than just seeing the plan unfold. Mm-hmm. Here, it's entertaining, I think, for Saul Goodman to tell us the plan, and then the plan that unfolds is not his plan.
Yeah.
Like, because he's not Walter White, and, you know, Walter White, stuff would go bad in the execution or in the result, but, like, the plan kind of went the way you could, you know, but I felt like unless he explained the nuance of the car, then we wouldn't see, and like it's a Mercury, and what is it again? A Mercury, and we wouldn't see that, like, oh God, it's not a Mercury, it's a fucking Ford.
Sure.
Like,
but like we know they've already set up the exact scam. They've told the audience exactly what is going to happen. Now they're doing it again, and I didn't appreciate that. I thought it was just redundant. It was redundant to the point of disturbing me. Like,
taking me out. I disagree because I thought one of the pleasures was watching each part of the plan fall apart. And I wouldn't have had that pleasure if I didn't know what the plan was.
But you knew what the plan was. The skateboard twins were the plan. They've executed this plan in this episode already. We know that's what they're planning to do. Okay, fine, set up the car. And set up specifically that the car is the client's car. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. When you go to the corner and you explain in 10 minutes a procedure that we already know as an audience, so it gets annoying.
How is this different from the badger sitting on the bench against Jimmy In-N-Out or whatever the hell his name was? Like, that was the plan explained, everything laid out, it's going hilariously wrong, Walt's got a shuck and jive.
When did they explain the plan on that?
Because when he was giving him, like, the black and white and, like, you know, all the times he's been in prison and he takes the fall, and I guess they didn't explain it.
They explained it up front when he met with the cop and then got busted. That's the exact same thing they were going to do. They didn't have another scene where Saul explains the setup again.
I guess I see your point. It's just I found all that entertaining and you didn't. You were restless. Okay. So there's not...
Fair.
You're not wrong.
Neither are you.
Thank you.
So Jimmy's in his car. He's waiting for the Mercury to leave. He's practicing his razzmatazz.
Which that's a recurring motif. He loves to, like, psych himself up for this stuff,
yeah,
right?
He did it before the courtroom, in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he does. When the car leaves, he calls the twins to warn him. The twins execute the plan on the wrong car, and then they follow it. And Saul also, they call him, and he also follows them.
Sure.
I found it interesting, like, once you realize, oh my God, here is the client that he was trying to get to sign the contract earlier, you then understand, oh, he's trying to parlay this also into getting the embezzlement contract as well. So he's not just scamming them once, he's scamming them twice. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and so that's the other thing I thought was interesting. When did you realize, because
it was when they showed the woman getting into her car.
Yeah. That's the thing, because they kind of set you up for an aha moment, because you think this is going to be an outright revenge against Hamlin or someone like that. And I'm like, man, Hamlin's too slick for this. Like, as quick as Jimmy smoked this out, he's going to be even faster.
Yeah.
But I like that kind of, like, slight switcheroo. It wasn't like an earth-shattering twist, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it was
a good plan. The problem
execution
is,
was good, but
Jimmy, like a lot of people in Breaking Bad before him, doesn't have a good crew.
You're right about that. Yeah,
like these guys are not even as good as, well, you know, Huel got the magic fingers.
Yeah,
I forget what Red's name is.
Bill Burr.
Yeah, Bill Burr.
Whatever his character is,
he's got the gift of gab, and he can pull off scams. These guys are just, they're not even alpha or prototypes of those guys.
Maybe he's going to train them up like a Jesse.
Do you want to see more of these guys? I didn't really like them. I didn't like their face. I didn't like their fact that they're twins. I didn't like their
I liked them
manner,
okay.
Really?
Yeah, you know, they kind of remind me of...
It's like if the, you know, that one hippie dumbass on The Walking Dead that broke his ankle and then got his brains bashed in last season. It's like they cloned him.
Yeah.
They took that dude who's playing the Penguin now in Gotham. They took that dude and they cloned him, and now this is a character. And I'm like, oh, God. I don't know if I can stand a season of these guys.
You might not have to. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
So the car that these people are all following pulls into a driveway, and the twins stop, confront this old Hispanic lady who doesn't speak English, but
invites
them into the
house. They're just haranguing her, man.
Yeah, they're just saying dinero, si, dinero, mucho dinero. They're just yelling the little Spanish words they know at her. And she finally gets, you know, the idea that she's, something's going weird here. Let's invite him in and sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy shows up at the house. He knocks on the door. Door opens, and who else but Tuco pulls him into the house? That was surprising.
And what's funny is, you know, he's rolling tough and he's like, I'm an officer of the court. Open up in the name. That's the wrong.
In the name of the law.
When Tuco's face comes out, that's like, oh, God, did you knock on the wrong fucking door, man?
Yep.
Oh,
man. And made it worse with the words coming out of your mouth.
Oh, man. It was great. What did you think when you first saw Tuco? I was blown away.
I was, too.
Because I stayed remarkably spoiler-free.
Yep, me too.
My jaw dropped.
I knew Mike was going to be in this. I did not know Tuco was going to be in it.
Yeah.
Especially from the pilot, from the gate.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
So I was definitely shocked. And, you know, I was shocked when the door opened and a gun pointed at his head.
Because, yeah, I was like, what the fuck?
To see Tuco.
When did you know it was Tuco? Because as soon as I saw his sleeve, I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad you got that, too.
The just wild, flowery patterns on his shirts. Yeah.
Sure.
He's known for those. Good stuff. Like I said, this first episode in my second viewing was a lot better. I just had a few small problems with this one as far as pacing goes. As far as
for you, it's the second episode when the kind of weak, because if you did not like the plotting and scheming and belaboring of the plot, I can see why in episode two you started getting testy.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that when we get there tomorrow.
Yes. So let's do some pimping. We had a big announcement that we were really looking forward to talking about on today's podcast, but unfortunately, we have been beset by a bunch of unforeseen technical difficulties here with our feeds, and we've been wrestling them.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a chance as a result to get all the switches flipped to do the new hotness. So the good news is, if you've ever been curious about how you can support Bald Move, you can always get the latest and greatest information by going to support.baldmove.com. Amazon.com is a great way. You can straight up donate and give us cash. There's a lot of different options.
Amazon.baldmove.com.
Amazon.baldmove.com. Yeah. Excuse me.
Amazon.com is just going to give money to Bezos.
Don't want that. All the money.
No.
We need the pay the copper price.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the other thing we're started to do is, you know, and a lot of our research and our surveys have shown that the vast majority of people listen to these podcasts. Like, I listen to podcasts on my cell phone.
Yeah.
And our show notes have been always kind of a mess.
Not like a big mess, wall of text.
It's a big wall of text, and there's some funny stuff. And then at the bottom, I give a bunch of, like, in a conversational term, how you can contact us and support us. We're changing that around. So if you are listening and you want to support us, you can actually more immediately access those links at the top of the show notes and get right to it.
Yeah, and all the links are there. It'll take you right to our support page and take you right to Amazon.
Because we're independent podcasters. We don't got the AMC bucks. We don't got the Sony
Pictures
dollars.
No, that is the only way we make money.
This is, you guys, and you know, we don't have ads very often in the conventional sense because, again, we're independent, and that shit's hard to get, yo. so you guys are the ones that make the magic happen.
Yeah.
Go to support.baldmove.com if you're so inclined and help see how you can help us out. And if not, thank you very much for listening.
All right. Why don't we do some feedback?
Sure. Paulo L is going to kick us off, said, the black and white introduction, this introductory episode was absurdly breathtaking. I'm greatly excited that I'm able to delve in this universe again. But to be honest, I found it extremely difficult to sympathize with Jimmy. Because for those who are invested in this universe, we know the success that he ultimately becomes, success being a relative term in this world. But regardless, these little moments of sadness that we're supposed to sympathize with Jimmy, I just feel that the scene doesn't really evoke that. It might be a continued issue throughout the series, and I'm a little worried. Basically,
interesting. Okay.
You know, it's kind of like the Granite State episode. One of the issues I had with it was a pitiless look at Walter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like I should be feeling sorry for him, but I wasn't. And that cognitive dissonance was kind of tripping to me for this guy who I've had a lot of affection for, to see that he's just really this kind of asshole.
Yeah.
I think that's what Pablo's getting at, is that are we really supposed to feel sorry for this Jimmy guy who's lied, cheated, and scammed and been involved in up to the hilt and all these illegal activities and directly involved in murders and cover-ups and all that stuff? Are we really supposed to feel sorry for his comfortable life managing a Cinnabon?
I think that's fair.
I didn't have a problem with it because, again, I felt like, man, this is sad.
They did
sad watching Saul do all this.
They did a good job with his brother. That helped a lot, making him sympathetic in that he's trying to take care of his brother and do the right thing by him. And I guess just the way that everything is just shitting all over him makes him a little more sympathetic. And, you know, eventually he's going to have a rise to power.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Such as it is.
But in his current state, I didn't find it impossible to pity him, even if, yeah, it was a little more difficult knowing the future state of Saul.
Matt P. says, my personal timeline with Better Call Saul. I loved Breaking Bad. I wasn't thrilled about the concept of Better Call Saul. I didn't even plan on watching it. I was intrigued as people said it was good. And then finally, I decided to DVR it because what's the harm? At least I get to listen to another Bald Move podcast. Aw.
Oh, nice.
Then I watched it. Of course, in all capitals. Of course it's good. Did I think Villigan forgot how to make great television? What was I thinking? That's a good point. That's a good point. The cult, I mean, and plus, he already did this with The Lone Gunman. So not only do you have a professional.
He's made his mistakes.
All right. It's like Bill Belichick had to fail utterly in Cleveland before he could go on his reign of fucking greatness with the goddamn Patriots. I'm killing you with these sports references today, aren't I?
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking
about. Breaking your back with them. Buckle in. I'm still butthurt.
I can't.
Over
the... I'm in Saul's car.
Anyway, what was I saying? The cold open was the best snippet of TV since I've seen the True Detective tracking shot. It's throwing us right back into Breaking Bad style. When then you remember how in Breaking Bad he said he'd be managing a Cinnabon in Omaha. So great. So fucking great. Mm-hmm. Then he watches his commercials. Ugh. This show can't be watched if you haven't seen all Breaking Bad, but if you have, this just might be great. Which, by the way, I'm sure you can tell, we are spoiler, we are weapons-free spoiler environment here.
Yeah.
After we saw the first two episodes, we're like, this is a joke.
Yeah.
There's no way I can contain, at least I personally can't contain.
No, I'm with you. I completely changed my mind after seeing the first two episodes.
And I think that if you're the type of person that is spoiler-averse, you literally cannot watch Better Call Saul before you watch Breaking Bad.
You definitely can't listen to this podcast.
And you can't listen to this podcast because, well, I mean, I feel like Vince is just kind of flopping it out there. The intro.
Yeah.
The having Tuco involved. Like, there's tons of references. Mike? I mean.
Yeah.
You're talking about some really late season 3, season 4 stuff.
Yeah. No, it's all out there.
Anyway, so I totally felt like that. And I, again, in hindsight, why would Vince Gilligan, coming off this flush success, one of the best television shows of all time, why would he voluntarily chain himself to some bullshit thing? At any time, he could just say, no, we're not doing it. It's funny, man, we just couldn't make it work, whatever. We should have known better.
Yeah, and ultimately, I'm with him.
That it wasn't going to be just a failure on its face.
Yeah.
It's too soon to crown him, but I think it's also I kind of feel it's stupid for thinking that it was just going to be dumb. G Hall said, something I noticed about the opening of the first episode, Saul's life as Gene the Cinnabon guy is strikingly similar to how Walt was living in the Breaking Bad pilot. Both are living lower middle class mundane lives, growing old as they look back on their successful younger days, back to when they were really alive.
Yeah, I was in that way, certainly.
I was going with the Granite State comparison. He's going with the pilot.
Yeah. The only thing Walt had that Saul doesn't have is a family. So that's a
Slippin' Jimmy. You know, maybe
Slippin' Jimmy. You think Slippin' Jimmy had a family?
It would be interesting to see him with a a bastard. I guess a New Mexican bastard would probably be sand.
He was partying from winter to Labor Day on his found funds.
Everybody wanted to be Slippin' Jimmy's fan.
Yeah. Friend. Yeah, you might be right.
So,
big payday for Slippin' Jimmy is a payday for the town.
I think it would be interesting to have him, oh God, what if the twins are his?
We're building an awful lot of headcanon here.
Yeah, let's get back to the...
All right.
Michael P., important fact, the date on Saul's $700 check was May 13th, 2002. That's my two-year sexual anniversary. Yes, on May 13th, 2000, I lost my virginity in a magical performance. That said, I got mixed reviews. These are our listeners, folks. Uh-huh. Michael P.
Yep.
Anyway, I like this episode. I was mostly due to my love for Breaking Bad. It did seem like a stretch that Saul would meet Saul, Mike, and Tuco in the same episode, though. I'm in Mississippi tonight, and I haven't had a chance to see episode 2 because God has decided to fuck up everything this hotel has to quote-unquote offer. Yeah. I don't know. I like I said, it an instant cast. This came right up to the cliff of being too much, but it never became too much and never crossed the line into just parody.
This episode specifically?
Both episodes, in my mind. I know you might feel differently.
Yeah, we disagree on that.
Ben from Newcastle, England, which I have to wonder, where do you find a Newcastle in England? Are they just building them?
I think they're all old castles. Castle Boom? At this point.
Yeah. Ben, if that's your real name, and if you're really from England and you're Newcastle, hey, Jim and Aaron, do you have a problem with knowing a certain selection of characters can't die, no matter what happens to Saul or the situation we know that he's in, we know he'll get out of it. Same with Tuco. Mike, meeting a man when he inevitably appears, and any other Breaking Bad characters. Does this bother you as much as it does me? I feel like it takes away some of the drama.
A little bit.
That's the tough thing with prequels, right?
Yeah.
Like, that... It ultimately, is it surprising the prequels are unsatisfied when we know what happens to Anakin and we know what happens to Obi-Wan?
Sure.
On the other hand, I think that Better Call Saul is not the same thing as Breaking Bad. It doesn't feel like a train going to a terminal destination.
Okay.
Or
if it does, it's at least a journey you've never been on. Even if you've been to the city, like it's coming into a city another way.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with it, though I can understand why people wouldn't be and why I'm not totally okay with it.
Sure. It definitely takes away some, but that's the thing, like how, I guess, with Breaking Bad, like I never thought that Walt was in danger of dying, obviously. I can see them having two seasons of just, okay, what's the resolution?
Yeah.
It becomes a Skyler and Junior show and the hilarious adventures of Jesse.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
But I definitely thought maybe Skyler, maybe Junior, maybe Hank, maybe Jesse. Like, there was nobody safe other than perhaps Walt himself.
Mm-hmm.
Here, now, we know a lot of the surrounding characters are pretty much bulletproof.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know that this show needs to be that dramatic.
Sure, and you know that some characters, like... I kind of like seeing some characters who we know aren't in Breaking Bad, like specifically something from episode 2 that I will not talk about yet because that's really the only spoiler that we'll have.
Yeah.
You look at those characters and you go, oh, I know he's not around anymore. How's he going to die? How's he going to be, or at least be out of the picture, maybe not die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The opposite's like,
But you don't know their fate. So kind of seeing all these characters revolve around new characters is interesting in its own way.
Yep. Michael K said, a set piece flaw I have seen in both episodes. When Jimmy opens the door to his shithole office, there's always a chair in the way that the door pushes out of the way. When is that getting in the way of the door? Are rats rearranging his office when he's not in there? What the fuck?
It's the fucking lady at the nail salon.
She's just doing it to fuck with
me. She goes back. She crawls through the panel-less ceiling. She
gets a broom.
She sweeps it over toward the door.
That cucumber water-stealing son of a bitch.
Yep.
I'll show him.
Yep.
She just desperately wants him to move out.
Yeah.
But it's her storage area. He refuses to.
Yeah.
Matt E. said, several questions came to mind as I was watching this. Will we be seeing more of the black and white future or at any point in time during Breaking Bad, which we talked a little bit about?
Yep.
Was Mark or Mike just a parking lot attendant? We know he already was a cop previously.
Hmm.
That's a good question because I had a kind of a crackpot theory that I abandoned because I couldn't make it work that like maybe... He's working there to keep tabs on some prosecutor or someone that's important in the legal so Gus can get some leverage on them. But I'm like, no, that's too menial a task to send someone like Mike after.
Yeah, seems like it.
But I can't explain why he's so down and out. Someone as resourceful and valuable, you know, that kind of skill set.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know exactly why he was pushed out of
there. There's got to be an angle, right?
The PD. Yeah. I think we'll find out more about that.
All right.
I think that's a given.
Was the salon where Jimmy had his office space the same salon that Saul later tried to get Jesse and the Whites to buy into? Yes, that is true. Bonus question, will we see the laser tag establishment at any point? I say yes. I say that we have to see... we have to meet Bill Burr. We have to meet Meeting Man. We have to meet the laser tag. Everything that we saw Saul touch, I think Villigan wants to write into this show. It's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, Saul, as I recall, Saul knew about the laser tag place before he brought it to Walt and Jesse, right?
Yes, he did, because he knew that it had, I forget what he the guy's name, but it had a guy who is on ball or on the same page as far as cooking the books and all that stuff, and you need that guy.
Yeah, so I could definitely see him establishing that relationship maybe sure. toward the end, or depending how they jump around in time
sure.
at any point in this series.
Amanda from Connecticut said, after mailing you, I'm just mailing you on your question about Breaking Bad virgins / Walking Dead fans' opinions on the show. I'm a huge WD fan, and as cheesy as it can be, I like the show for what it is. I've seen about a dozen and a half episodes of Breaking Bad when they marathon the show, so I'm familiar with the core cast and major plot points, but not the intricacies and fine details. That said, I watched the first two episodes of Better Call Saul with no knowledge of who any of the characters are except for Saul, and was immediately drawn into it. I didn't need the backstory, the side story, or whatever carries over from Breaking Bad to understand what's going on other than the Cinnabon scene at the opening, which was puzzling. I'm wondering if you guys, being so possessed of intimate knowledge of Breaking Bad, are judging a little too harshly on whether this show can stand alone. So far, from my own perspective, I don't see why it couldn't. There are apparently tons of Easter eggs for fans of the original show, but this isn't so tied in to needing that knowledge that's detracting from my from the story they're trying to tell here. Granted, it's only the very beginning of a hopefully few season run, but if Better Call Saul keeps ticking along like this, I can't see where it can possibly go wrong. So there you go.
Okay. There's the other side of this equation. We're, I mean, that's why I said at the beginning, we yep. can't possibly see it from any other perspective. So it's good to have people writing in who haven't seen Breaking Bad. Although, sorry, we just spoiled a whole bunch of it, probably.
Yeah. Are you ready to take some lumps? Are you ready to be called to task?
Yeah.
Because Mark from Milwaukee wants to do it.
Bring it on.
Quote unquote, I don't like the pacing, says the two dudes who cast freaking Mad Men. Like Alan Sepinwall said, this show is going to take its time, and I'm perfectly fine with that. I see this as a character-driven piece, and as someone who misses Breaking Bad desperately, I love the slow-down approach. I thought the second episode is very intense, regardless of what some knew about the ultimate outcome. Let's skip a little bit for the spoilers. Now to the person who said this was better than Breaking Bad, please put down the glass pipe and check into rehab. It is impossible to perfect already perfect television, but I don't need Better Call Saul to do that. I just need it to weave right into the Jesse and Walt years with some intensity, and it will do that, I have no doubt. We're off to a great start, and you fellas need to calm it on down. Jim, a rebuttal.
Mad Men uses its moments for its slow moments for very good characterization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it slows down, it's for a purpose. Like, when this show slows down, I felt like it wasn't doing anything. It was spinning its wheels versus Mad Men, which does something with those moments.
Yes. Yes. It's about watchability. Now, I differ in an opinion to you, but I see what you're saying. Like, there's a difference between the slow-paced cold open, right?
Sure. I love that. I think that's fantastic.
Because there was, even though nothing was happening, things were happening. And we were learning a lot about Jimmy that we and saw that we didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, and I felt like that was the case through most of this episode. Like I said a couple of times now, next episode, we'll talk more about that.
Right. Holy moly, I forgot how much email we had. Joe E. said, first, I greatly enjoyed the show, and I'm loving it. It's not Breaking Bad, but it's still a great time. Running into Tuco randomly is too much of a coincidence. However, it's a fishnado.
Oh God.
However, my feeling is they just needed to get it out of their system. If they keep this up week to week, it'll wear on me. But one character as fan service is fine. Very impressed with Michael McKean, especially seeing him yelling that he'll get better in the pilot. But could someone explain the dynamic between him, Saul, and Hamlin? Is Hamlin running a scam on them, or is Saul just being selfish, wanting access to millions of dollars? Will something happen if he doesn't show up to work long enough without cashing out that he'll lose money? I'm confused. Hamlin isn't likable, but I don't understand what he's done that's wrong so far. It's a good point.
Here's what I think is happening. I think that they are trying to pay down his partnership slowly rather than cashing him out in one big chunk, because it might actually cause them to have to liquidate that company.
I don't know.
That's what it felt like to me. I don't remember how much of this is drawing on episode two knowledge.
Well, plus that's essentially the plot of the last season of Mad Men too.
Yeah, yeah. Pushing somebody
senior
out.
Senior partners trying to push someone out and, yeah. and you know, pay them to keep, it's cheaper to just keep paying them a salary. In this case, the peanuts, or is it worth it just to buy him out? I mean, obviously, in this case, it's like a clear, like, yeah, it's way better to just give this guy his stipend.
Yeah, I mean, he got it. Didn't he get a check for like $800 or something? That, as opposed to that $26,000 one that he was sending Jimmy.
And he was going to get on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, what is that, an hour? Are you sending those hourly? Because maybe then.
Yeah, yeah. He also says the lower stakes to show definitely keep its ceiling lower than Breaking Bad. Walt had a good life and a lot to lose. Even if he died without making money, he still would have had a legacy as good as a good dad and husband, and he'd have a family who loved him. And he lost all that. Mm-hmm. Saul has none of that and is at the bottom rung of society. I'm surprised how low they have him there with nowhere to go but up.
And it's even arguable if he goes up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he certainly goes up in financial status.
Yeah.
But he goes down in moral status.
Sure.
So, I mean, what's
Saul
your measuring
happy?
Stick
like,
there?
What, that's the thing. Like, what makes Saul tick? Mm-hmm. There is an idealistic heart beating in this man's chest. So the stakes are all internal, it seems like, that we're geared up here.
Yeah.
Move on to Amanda G. I know we're all, I think she's going to tell us another calm the fuck down. I know we're all super excited and apprehensive and on pins and needles to either love or hate the show, but I really think we should all calm down about it and try to judge it as a standalone show and just laugh up our sleeve at the inside jokes and references. Odenkirk is a talent and deserves his due. As far as spoilers, that's a tough one. I'm going to skip all that because we've decided by fiat that we're just going to spoil things. And by the way, the vast majority of fans all wrote in very passionately not wanting us to pull punches on spoilers. So
well, the vast majority of our fans have seen Breaking Bad.
Yes.
So what do you expect?
It's a flagship show. It's the first one we started. What are you going to do?
Selection bias, my friend.
Boom. on the flip side, as a huge Breaking Bad fan, it's fantastic to see all the tie-ins and references and personality prequels, but this is a show about Jimmy and Saul, his roots, his Albuquerque experience, ultimately his rise and fall. As it happens, Jimmy crossed paths with pre-meth Tuco, the glimmer of crazy and the charisma that probably get him into his final power state. This is some spoiler stuff. I'm gonna actually save most of this email for tomorrow. I meant to do that and I fucked it up. Anyway, she goes, the show has a more comical tone to match Jimmy and Saul, and I'm all for it. I definitely want you guys to keep it at 100, but please try to cut it a little slack. There you go. It's hard to do that both. It's hard to both keep it 100 and cut slack. Those are antithesis. I would give you weak tea if I was Larry Wilmore. You not seen the Larry Wilmore show? That's what she's referencing here.
Is that another sports thing?
No. It's the dude that took over from Colbert.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Colbert. Doug L. said, I was just finishing your instant cast, and I was kind of surprised that you were concerned with the number of nods to Breaking Bad, even the subtler ones. I mean, isn't this part of the fabric of the show? Breaking Bad became filled to the brim with Lost-style, secretly meaningful song clues, freeze frames of rocks that look like Gus Fring's head, or using Saul's license plate to foreshadow Jesse's lawyer up, or wire up, or what? I can't even remember what the hell that is.
Yeah, they had blocked off the L.
Yeah.
So I just said W-Wire.
At a certain point, wire up because of the wire. Gotcha. At a certain point, spotting these things became all part of the fun. It seems that BCS, Better Call Saul, is doing the same thing, but can that really be a reason to ding the show? I think that's a fair criticism.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a line. It's
a fine line. But it's also, like, it's hard for me. Like, I don't know that it's fair to criticize the show for that, but if it reduces my enjoyment of the show, and I'm noticing these things constantly, and it's kind of pulling me out of just the universe that Better Call Saul is trying to create.
Yes.
I don't know that it's fair to say that it's a worse show because of it, but it can certainly reduce my enjoyment of it.
And there's balance in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, like I talked about Gotham. Gotham's pilot is the preeminent example of too fucking much. nowhere near that for me, but it's certainly, and I think that the bigger, I don't know, this is a generalization, but the bigger a Breaking Bad fan you are, and the more anxious of a personality type you are, the more you're inclined to be, you know, like if you're a parent watching your kid in a talent show, are you the type that's going to be like chewing your fingernails, worried that they're going to fuck up? Are you going to be the person who's relaxed and going to be delighted with whatever because it's your kid and it's cute and whatever? Who cares? If I'm honest with myself,
I'm more of a finger chewer.
I'm more of the fingernail chewer. I'm more of the, God, I hope this doesn't, they don't embarrass themselves.
Yeah. And it, I mean, you know, that concept of, let's save it for episode two.
Okay.
Save it for episode two. I don't want to get spoilery on this.
Michelle, I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan and completely enjoyed the first two episodes of Better Call Saul. From the interviews and articles I've read, I didn't expect it to be Breaking Bad. For me, it doesn't need to have the same tone or pacing to be plot-driven in the same way. I'm enjoying the slow burn of it all. I have a tremendous respect for the writers and everyone involved in the project and trust them. She says, Saul's superpower is his gift of gab, and Breaking Bad, it seems so natural to him. Now it's interesting to see him in a period of his life where his confidence is low and he's literally practicing what he will say beforehand. Odenkirk is doing a great job and he can handle the dramatic parts. The scene between him and his brother in which the brother yells at him and they both seem to be holding back tears worked really well.
Yep.
I think the show works as a character study with some of the visual and comedic sense of Breaking Bad. I enjoyed the tone of the pilot changing once the skateboarder caper got underway. I don't believe Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould would allow, at this point, the studio to dictate anything to them. I think they're telling a story
I'm almost scared of that. Like, that's where I feel some of the, like...
Because it can go bad.
The self-indulgent...
See George Lucas.
...over-referential stuff is coming from. It's just... They're in a fucking room. They don't have any oversight and they're doing what they think is funny and fun and awesome. And that worked great on Breaking Bad, but I feel like they had more people kind of reining them in a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm worried. I'm not saying that stuff is necessarily getting completely in the way yet. And I'm not willing to judge this show yet.
I feel like
on the face of it, but I'm slightly worried with all of the references, with some of the pacing problems I have in episode two.
As a counterpoint, I think that Vince Gilligan was pretty hands fucking off from the studio for season 5A and 5B, and that was one of the greatest seasons of television.
Hands off? Oh, they just let him do what he wanted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like after season four, when the thing blew up and got blew up on Netflix, like nobody was telling him shit.
Yeah.
And it still was awesome. And he seems like a humble, down to earth. He seems like the kind of guy who would be immune to have smoke blown up their ass.
I agree. He also seems like the guy, kind of guy who would play a joke a little too far and think it's funny a little bit more than he should.
Well, Jim, we all hate the things we see in others that remind us of oneself.
Yes,
so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've ever felt like you're being trolled with Bald Move, you probably are.
Yeah.
You probably are.
Except for this. Now people are going to think you're just taking a piss on Better Call Saul, too. But maybe you are. Maybe I'm being trolled. You've actually done that to me on a fucking podcast.
And the guy, an elaborate the guy's
psychological
name,
joke on me.
The guy's name is Slippin' Jimmy. I mean...
There you go.
What do you want?
You're slippery, Jimmy. All right. Anthony P. says, I was extremely exuberant about the premiere, but I may have been blinded by my affection for what I call the Villiganisms. Awesome music, cool perspective shots, great dialogue, etc. After listening to your instant cast, I agree. It was a really slow from a plot perspective. My big worry, though, is how far can this series go? After all, I'm pretty sure Walt was the most interesting and dramatic client that Walt Saul dealt with. While he certainly has had some interesting connections, he was mostly an accident settlement attorney. His dealings with Walt had to have been the apex dramatically, since that's what's eventually pushed him to leave Albuquerque. So if we've already seen the most interesting Saul Goodman story, what can we expect from the prequel? That's a pretty solid point.
Well, the brother in the law firm had me excited. I do agree. Like,
it can't be as exciting as Breaking Bad, though.
It's not going to be as exciting as Breaking Bad, but it is something that is entirely separate from Breaking Bad. In that we never saw anything about this.
Sure.
So that could potentially be very dramatic, very interesting. I think they have places to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So that has me excited.
We don't often see that, like, different takes in tone on the same universe. It's like the Star Wars sequels, there's not going to be a wacky musical one. You know, when there was not like even like Deep Space Nine was the dark, gritty Star Trek, but it's still fucking communist utopia, liberal society, right?
Uh-huh.
you know, Law and Order and or like, you know, Special Victims Unit isn't like the Sunshine and Rainbow version.
No.
This
yeah.
I'm trying to think of a spinoff that is radically different in kind of tone and pacing and all that stuff by still being the same universe with the same characters. That's a tough thing to pull off, right?
I would imagine so, yeah.
Michael McBee said, I don't know how much experience you have with the Far Cry video game series. Almost nil for me.
I've seen some of it played. I haven't played any myself.
But if you do have any decent amount of experience with the third installment, you know that Vaz, Tuco's new lieutenant, is portrayed by the same actor, which in the game you could describe as a scarier, smarter, and more intimidating Tuco. Huh. So maybe he isn't as level-headed as he appears. Just something I thought I'd share with you all. You said that as we were watching. It's like, this guy is smarter and more rational than Tuco, which makes him scarier.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Definitely.
I feel like he is a man to be reckoned with.
Like, I don't think that anybody can really control Tuco.
But you
very
can
well,
manipulate
but,
him. It seems like yeah. It's not that even that hard to manipulate him if you.
And he can't disguise what he's thinking either. Tuco's going to
feeling.
Tell you immediately what he is thinking and
yes.
feeling, and you can react to that.
Yes.
Whereas this guy might.
It's Sonny versus Michael Corleone.
Boom. Shit. I mean, this shall be probably saved for episode two. But
yeah.
But yes, that guy is much scarier to me. You will see him in episode two if you have not seen it already.
Yep. Tom G in Volkswagen said, this is another longtime bald mover backing us up.
Yeah.
I like the storytelling, the camera work, the new characters, the new stories, etc. But please, fewer Easter eggs for Easter egg's sakes.
I'm
the only
with you.
Breaking Bad flashback forward character crossovers that make sense are the ones that were in Saul. So Breaking Bad circle, Mike, Gus, the A-Team, the Disappearers, Honey Tits, and Laser Tag Danny. That's it, Danny. You need a Danny. In a prequel, it does not make sense for Saul to interact with the Whites, Jesse, Schraders, Gomez, the Mexican cartel, or Team Panzer Gray. I want the same creativity, the same quirky character Saul with brand new stories. This was a solid 8 that would have been better. I can't believe I'm saying this without Tuco.
I kind of agree with that. I mean,
yeah,
I don't.
To me, it is a little bit further from the edge, but that's the thing. It's subjective,
yeah.
And depending on what type of Breaking Bad parent you are, I can see people running the range of good. No one's saying this is terrible.
No.
And no one's even saying it's disappointing. Mm. It's basically how awesome do you think the new show is?
I think probably the people who bought into the idea that this was better than Breaking Bad right off the bat
right.
are disappointed. But that's on them.
Sure.
That's their fault, not the show's fault.
Sure. And that's it. If you'd like to give us some more feedback, you can do so at Breaking Good Jesus. No.
Breaking Good
stop.
Jesus
Breaking
at
good,
baldmove.com.
Breaking Good Jesus. no, you can do it at bettercastsaul@baldmove.com. You can get on Facebook on facebook.com/baldmove, on Twitter @baldmove, and check out our forums. Especially if you are, I can't imagine you're going to listen to this podcast and watch a show and you care about spoilers.
Yeah.
But if you did, you can start up a spoiler-free discussion about it on our forums like you can't in Facebook.
Sure, if you want to.
So there you go. At forums.baldmove.com. We will have another podcast out tomorrow. It's Hell Week here at Bald Move.
Yeah. Somewhere around 6 or 7 podcasts this week.
Sure.
15
hours of content we're going to generate.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll be back for tomorrow for the second episode. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye-bye.